Hi there. I'm Paul Boger, host of KNPR State of Nevada. Enjoy this conversation from the show. If you like it, please follow us, and thanks.
Southern Nevada has many places to view art, and some of it just happens to be located in fairly peculiar places. Nowadays, a drive into the desert, sometimes far into the desert, will take you to art installations that have become world famous. In particular, local art has found its way beyond the local galleries, in some instances, in high-traffic tourist areas. And while there's plenty of Las Vegas-based arts in the Arts District, one unlikely space is giving several Las Vegas-based artists a free, high-visibility spot to show their work. KNPR's Mike Pravat spoke to Scott Dickensheets, editor-at-large of KNPR's Desert Companion magazine, about all the interesting settings one finds art in Southern Nevada. But first, he chatted with attorney Isaiah Jerez about his art billboard project. And as a note, the Rena Denon Abbey Art Museum and MGM Resorts are financial supporters of Nevada Public Radio. Now, here's that conversation.
Isaiah, thanks for making the time to speak with us today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here with you, Mike.
So how did you get the idea of putting local art on a billboard?
Yeah, so my marketing director approached me and said, hey, we've got to get a billboard up. And I let him know, I don't want to be on the billboard. If we're going to do a billboard, we got to do something different. We got to be something that turns the attention to the community. And so I let him know, we've got to do something looking at some type of community organization, some type of charitable organization that we can display and give the space to them and maybe give them a little shout out to us. My marketing director is very tied into the arts community, and he came to me with the idea of what if we have a rotating art billboard?
It almost sounds like it's potentially a critique of the proliferation of attorneys on billboards. It sounds like it's not necessarily that.
Yeah, when I first started doing personal injury, we put up a billboard of myself, and it was fun, right? I had friends in the community that would joke around saying, oh, yeah, I saw you over there by the freeway. Mm-hmm. You know, the billboards are an important space for attorneys, of course, because we're the brand of the firm. The thing about my firm is we really try to give back to our community. We focus on serving the community. And so I wanted the billboard to not be about me, but about what we do. And that's how my marketing director came up with this idea of, hey, there's this space downtown where we can recapture that for artists and give that back to artists.
Now, Isaiah, is there a precedence for this, either in town or somewhere else? I mean, did your marketing director know that this worked somewhere else, or is this something he dreamed up?
I got this idea from a friend of mine who's in Ohio, and he's known as a hometown lawyer out there. And he blankets little towns that he's in Ohio with billboards. And out there, billboards are like $500, right? Really cheap for what it costs for each month. And so there was like a local celebrity out there that had this crazy mullet, and he put him up on there, kind of giving him a space. And my friend, the hometown lawyer, has been kind of rotating that space out, giving that space back to charitable organizations. So for me, right, the cost is a little bit different. It's not a $500 billboard. We are providing this space to the community because I think that's the best way that I can tell people about what I do.
And I got to ask, you know, you're talking about the cost of a billboard. When you go to a billboard company and say, hey, I want to buy an ad, but I'm going to do something a little different. This is for the community. Do they give you a lower rate as a result?
Yeah, I don't think we're getting a lower rate. I think we're still getting pay what's required. But I understand that, right? That's a space that they have that they need to be able to provide to others. And, you know, a big cost that we are incurring is we're changing out this artwork every month.
So it sounds like you've had a pretty good response, certainly from the artistic community.
Yeah, no, it's been wonderful. We've had a lot of great support from the artists in the community because they see the vision that we have, right? This is not necessarily about us. This is about getting visual ownership back from downtown for those artists.
Once you came up with this idea, you buy the billboard space. How do you execute the idea from there?
Yes, it is a lot of work. And our marketing director has been working with Paco at Psionic Artworks, and he's been very integral in curating the artwork. And so we've received some inquiries directly from artists. And coming up this next month, we're going to do a call for art. And on our Instagram, at Jerez Law, we're asking artists to pay attention there and to look to see what is going to be the process for them to submit their artwork.
We're in our sixth month of the Art Billboard, so you are compiling works that have already been shown at an exhibit called Art Over Maine. This is going to be at Mad Gallery. It opens on Friday with a reception in the evening. So what can attendees of the event or whenever they go to the exhibit expect? Is it literally just 8 or 10 billboard works that they happen to fit inside of this gallery?
Yes. No. So some of the art isn't able to fit in the gallery, right? Other, you know, it could be too large, or some of the art has been sold and is no longer in possession of the owners. But we are featuring 15 of those artists, and their artwork will be there.
So it sounds like even if someone's work that has already been on the billboard has sold, you'll have other works that they've done to say, here's an artist we featured, and here's some other things they've done.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's another space for them to come in and to show their artwork.
Now, on the website, I saw 20 artists in 10 months. Do you see a life for this promotion beyond the 10-month mark? Do you think there's an additional future for this promotion?
When we first entered into this project, we wanted to be committed for a year. We didn't want it to be something that just went for a couple of months, but really something that the artist could rely on. And so looking at the support that we've had, we've decided to go ahead and move forward and doing it in 2027.
Ooh.
And providing more opportunities for artists.
And that's Isaiah Jerez of the Jerez Law Firm. He is also the originator of the Art Billboard, which highlights two local artists every month on a billboard in the Arts District. And the exhibit for it, which is called Art Over Maine, starts this Friday, August 21st at Mad Gallery, which is also in the Arts District. Isaiah, thanks so much for coming here.
Yeah, appreciate it, Mike.
And joining us now is Scott Dickensheets, editor-at-large for KNPR's Desert Companion. He's also a longtime arts writer in Southern Nevada. Scott, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
In your experience, what is usually behind efforts to have art placed in areas where one might not expect to see it?
For a lot of people who'd be placing the art, it's about serving the audience. You know, like a lot of art tends to cluster around centers of capital and places that can afford, you know, to place art around their properties or whatever. So by putting things in unusual offbeat places, you open it up to people who wouldn't otherwise go to those business and industry. So it expands the audience, and it helps the art in many cases to be seen in something other than kind of a pristine white-walled gallery or a perfectly calibrated display area. It helps recontextualize it, gives it a fresh meaning, and it exposes it to more people.
Do these works and their sort of unexpected appearances add something to the city beyond just, hey, you know, a cultural surprise? I'm thinking that some of these works sort of add to what I think is commonly believed to be a city that has a more surreal air to it.
Yeah, and I think it sort of adds to that in an artistic and interesting way. Because a lot of the surreality of Las Vegas doesn't depend on art in any real way, other than, you know, the whatever cultural manifestations you'd accrue to, like, lighting and spectacle and sort of thing like that. But by putting art in these offbeat places, there is the surprise factor. But then it also suggests that Las Vegas is a community where things happen not only at the high-end level, but interesting things happen at the human level where most of us actually live and circulate.
So let's get into some specific works for a bit here. I want to address some of the far-flung pieces of art. I'm thinking right now of the large-scale land art pieces, City and Double Negative by Michael Heiser. Those are both in remote areas of East Southern Nevada. And the mostly outdoor Goldwell Museum, and that's just west of Beatty. Those take at least an hour and a half to drive, at the very least, to get to. I wonder how much you gauge the experience of seeing those works by the effort that it takes to each of those remote desert settings.
Well, that's an interesting question, Mike. And one would hope that, you know, the art could stand apart from the effort made to reach it. But we're human beings, and that's not really always possible. But they're three very different works. And so I think there are probably three very different types of responses. Like when you get out to Beatty and you see the Goldwell Open Air Art Museum, they're whimsical. The pieces are whimsical. And some of them are very thoughtful, but also, you know, sort of fun. The effort it took to get there, you finds release in this sort of expression of joy at finding these trippy pieces out in the middle of nowhere in a ghost town, essentially. So there's that. The two Heiser pieces, Double Negative and City, are a bit different because their intent is different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been to City. It is a long, difficult process to get to. Entrance is really well restricted. It's like six people at a time, twice a day. But it's a much more sort of immersive, deeply felt experience. And so the effort taken to get there actually becomes part of the experience, because the experience itself is so vast that it sort of subsumes the 3-hour travel time there and the 3 hours back. It all seems sort of a piece with the giant immersive, you know, sort of experience of city.
Now, if folks want to see large-scale art sculptures in the desert, they don't have to necessarily drive 3 hours over to Alamo. They only have to drive about 25 minutes south to the Jean Dry Lake, where there famously is Seven Magic Mountains. And that's, of course, the multicolored stack of rocks by Ugo Rondinone. It was installed in 2016, and its stay off of I-15 has been extended far beyond that initial 2-year agreement. Scott, you know, there was initially a thought that it might move up north, but can you imagine this piece anywhere else? I feel like its position just right outside of the original Mojave Desert visual disruptor, Las Vegas, is just too perfect for that location, for that artwork to change. What's your feelings about that?
Well, I agree 100%. Even though the artist has created similar stacks for other places, somehow this feels like perfectly situated. It does a lot of really interesting things, if you ask me, which is, for one thing, it's the super bright original object that's not trying to sell you anything, which makes it an anomaly in Las Vegas from the get-go. But also, if you look around the site where it is, there's a massive freeway, there are railroad tracks, there's a quarry nearby and a shooting range. So that area of the desert has been hard used by humans. And these seven joyful, you know, buoyant stacks of brightly colored rocks are the only thing out there that redeems our presence. You know, it's the only thing that out there that says, hey, humans aren't just destructive beings. And I like that about it. In fact, every New Year's morning, I go out there and just spend some time out there contemplating that.
What a nice little yearly reset. I like that. Las Vegas artists Justin Favela and Ramiro Gomez took inspiration from Seven Magic Mountains. They colored and stacked several tires for a temporary public art display in an empty lot in East Las Vegas. That work was called Seven Magic Tires. It was initially part of an exhibit at the Barrick Museum. So this art went from a conventional art space, and then it went over to an unconventional one. Do you think that it's otherwise pretty difficult for art to make that kind of transition as effectively as that piece did?
Well, there's not a lot of art that transitions that easily from a gallery space to, you know, an exposed outdoor, you know, sort of suburban or urban setting. So, yeah, it's not a natural transition for most art. But most art, I mean, a lot of art can make it, I think. That one just happened to be a really, really good and funny and lively example of it. But I think it's not impossible for that transition to take place for other works.
Now, Scott, we have talked a lot on this program about the Rita, Dean, and Abby Art Museum, which is in an underdeveloped suburban area near Lone Mountain, I think is maybe the easiest way to describe that. It's technically part of the home where Abby lived, but now it's an art facility, and it's open to the public, and you can just drive right up to the front door. No parking garages, no meters, no downtown or university traffic to contend with. Do you think its location says anything generally about the accessibility of art?
I think it says that second-handedly. I mean, I think primarily it was built there because that's the land that the private foundation that built it owned. So, but I think that is a message that it does send, that this is like happening at the community level. And yet it's a museum quality museum. I mean, it's not some slapdash building they put up, and it's really well done. And Rita Abbey herself was, as they say, contained multitudes. She was so many different kinds of artists over her career. The collection itself is so varied that it feels less like a, you know, like a vanity project and more like a legitimate, real museum experience.
So, Scott, we cannot ignore the Strip. There's been lots of art developments that have happened there over the last 30 years, some of which feels kind of commonplace, and some that maybe doesn't. I want to talk about two notable works that I think are often talked about when we talk about art on the Strip, and that's Nancy Rubin's boat-centric sculpture in the middle of City Center. It's called Big Edge. And then there's the former ACOB experiential light art installation by James Terrell that used to hide up top of the Louis Vuitton store at the Crystals Mall. You know, two tremendous works of art. I in particular loved ACOB when it was open. Do you think that they transcended their atypical locations?
Yes, I do. I do think so. I mean, ACOB took the like the fundamental element of Las Vegas mythology, which is light, and did something brand new in the context of Las Vegas with it. And it was so deeply evocative and generated so many feelings. And then Terrell is such a major figure in the art world that, yes, I think the fact that it appeared in a mall on the Strip is sort of like a, you know, an interesting footnote to it, but it doesn't define it in any way. And likewise, you know, Nancy Rubin's Big Edge, which is like these 200 boats blasting out of this, you know, engineered cantilevered facility in front of Vidara, is pretty amazing. And it's so thoughtful, and there's so many weird dichotomies to it, like boats in the air, boats in the desert. And then it has this sort of like this random bursting energy against these, you know, the sort of slick luxury surfaces of the high-end architecture around it, that it has a really lively presence there that, you know, it's not easy to dismiss as corporate plop art, which, you know, some of the other pieces on the Strip can be, you know, can fit that description. Mm-hmm. It is really dynamic and really thoughtful and interesting. And, you know, and even if you just start to ask yourself, why boats? That leads you somewhere. You can sit there and think for a while looking at it. And it's just a tremendous achievement, both like physically, that it all holds together, and, you know, and conceptually.
And Scott, I'm sure you have a favorite or two that we haven't mentioned, you know, something that's installed in a place where one might not go for art. What do you got?
Well, we don't have to go too far from Big Edge for this. The artist Maya Lin, artist and architect, whom most people know as the creator of the Vietnam War Memorial, created this piece for the lobby of ARIA. It hangs over the check-in desk. And it is a topographical rendering in silver of the Colorado River. And it's very delicate. In fact, if you're so absorbed in checking in, you might not even really clock it. But it's delicate and it's beautiful. But it also, by rendering it in silver, it speaks to the, you know, to the value of water and the river in this context. And so, you know, you're there in this highly capitalized environment with this, you know, very conceptual representation of nature confronting you. And it's just a really, to me, a powerful experience to observe that.
Scott, I'm wondering, you know, based on your travels elsewhere in this country, you know, to cities that might either be bigger than Las Vegas, or maybe are known for having a bigger art complement, I'm wondering if you think that we are unique with some of our most well-known art showing up in some of the most non-obvious places. You know, are we just an atypical city dealing with the atypical dynamic, or do we sort of just accept that other cities have art in places that we might not necessarily put them, and it's just normal for those cities?
I think it's a little of each. I think a lot of cities are, you know, are onto the idea of that art, whether it's the city itself or the philanthropists within it, that art can have a levitating effect on the people who use the space. And so I think there are plenty of places where you can find offbeat art in offbeat places in other cities. I think that's a given. But what makes us a little unique is just the nature of our main industry, which is, you know, hospitality, and it's focused on a lot of things that are not, nobody would consider artistic, you know?
Yeah.
It's people don't come here for the art, but then they come here and they find plenty of it if they just open their eyes. If you're here at a convention at the Rio, for instance, there's a lot of really cool art hanging in the hallways in that convention area by local Las Vegas artists whom we know. And that's just like one of many examples. And so to find art represented in places where the real job is fleecing the tourists, I think that sort of sets it apart in a certain way.
And that's Scott Dickensheets. He is the editor-at-large for Desert Companion, where he has written about many of these uniquely placed works of art. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.